Bryce, if I could maybe ask you first, I mean, what is it like? You know, you write these pieces of music, I presume you start off, you're on your own, couple of notes, a little sketch of something, and then you come in tonight and you hear an orchestra perform it. It must be one of the greatest thrills imaginable.
It's not lost on me how lucky I am as a, I'm not sure, you know, for those of you who come to concerts often, hearing two pieces by a living composer is quite rare, especially if he's in the room. And then a third one. What can I say? Both of these two colleagues, close friends, old collaborators. I mean, these are two of my closest musical collaborators, and so they, you know, they're woven into everything for me. So it's like I've been lucky to be just be around really talented people my whole life, and so when I see them playing this music, it's like it's their music, and it was a wonderful evening.
And Bryce, the Mari piece. The last time that we spoke, I remember in a public situation like this, you were living in Paris at the time, and Mari doesn't sound like a Parisian piece. You're clearly in the countryside and you've moved to the Basque country. So tell me a little bit about where you live, and I assume that was important in the inspiration here.
Yeah, I'm from Ohio originally, so it sounds quite a highfalutin living in Paris and then now the Basque country. But yeah, my wife is from Paris, and so I moved to Paris a bit over 10 years ago, and we have a 7-year-old, and during a certain terrible period of time a few years ago when the world shut down and we were all wearing masks, I'm not going to start talking about it, but we left and ended up living in a small, in a gîte, like a 30 square meter little apartment on a farm. We have some musician friends, the great pianist sisters, Katia and Mariola Beck, who I wrote a double piano concerto for, who are coming in April actually as part of the residency, and they're from there. Ravel is also from about 10 minutes from where I live now. And we ended up down there and fell in love with the place and never came back. I remember there were several months where I had bought one pair of shorts from the supermarket that I was wearing and a t-shirt, and we had, you know, no luggage from Paris, and we basically fell in love with this place, and eventually we went back to Paris and kind of closed things up, and I started writing music down there. So the violin concerto was written there. I live on the edge of this. It looks a lot like Ireland if you've not been. It's kind of green, and there's these beautiful hills and ocean, and it rains a lot, and is generally a very beautiful place. So I had a commission from Semyon Bishkov for the Czech Philharmonic around that time, and was doing these walks every day with my son in the woods. And there's a moment in the piece where you start to hear where they play the orchestral bells, and there's a tiny little rhythm, and there's these bells, and that's actually the sound of the sheep. I never thought I'd write a pastoral symphony, but it's essentially that for me.
A composer, though, Bryce, if you sent a poet to a place like that, they'd immediately start writing poems about the countryside. You know, they would do that. But as a composer, when you're in that situation, does the inspiration come literally, you know, out of nowhere? Or do you start to think to yourself, I really should be writing something about this?
I mean, to tell you the truth, you know, obviously my music has a lot of rhythm in it and a lot of energy, and poor Pekka, it goes. And it's often, it's restless, right? But what I've, for instance, for me, the violin concerto in the second movement, when Pekka goes way up high, which is something that really Pekka does, I think, better than anyone in the world. And so that was like the first thing I knew I was going to do was I was going to send him up into the stratosphere.
Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, you do a lot of things better than anyone in the world, but that, it's like the one quiet moment in the piece, actually. And for me, the journey is to that precipice. It's kind of to see out across the horizon. You're looking at this vista. And I had never really thought about it before, that a lot of my pieces have that moment of there's this kind of winding, intense journey towards something that's going to open up. And so I think when I wrote Mari, it was just giving a little bit more time to that vista. So it's kind of this, it is a piece about a landscape.
And the references in that piece to Mahler and to Dvorak, I'm asking this as someone who is not a composer, I wonder, does the music of Mahler and Dvorak itself inspire you or kick something off, you know, literally the music, or is it just your knowledge of them, your awareness of the general bigger picture?
I mean, every time I write a piece, I've written music for Andre, I've written music, several pieces for Pekka. I find a way in through my collaborators. And in this particular case with Mari, it was commissioned by the Czech Philharmonic, which is actually, it's one of the great orchestras of Europe. They are well known for Dvorak, for Mahler, for, you know, playing a certain kind of repertoire, which, you know, to be honest, is not the first thing that in the past I've written a lot of music inspired by Renaissance music, Baroque music. If it's more recent composers, it's Stravinsky and Bartok that are really close to my heart. And so I was, I love Mahler. Mahler is, if you look at a Mahler score and you just open it up, you can open to any page and it looks like it was written yesterday half the time. I mean, it's so kind of timeless. And I think something about that moment, and honestly taking these walks in the woods, the other thing I was thinking about was, you know, at a time when the orchestras were not playing, is sort of imagining, you know, Andre walking in the woods and just sort of recall, what if all of a sudden the orchestras were no longer there? And then it was just a sort of memory and the pieces started to mix up in your head. And so there's these little there's like a couple little fragments of the end of Mari has a little fragment of Mahler Third Symphony. And the I'm sure the horn player, if they're here, heard it, but there's a bit of a wink towards the New World Symphony, which honestly was sort of like Dvorak went to America, wrote the New World Symphony, and I thought, well, I'm an American going to Prague, I might as well quote it.
And Andre, you know, when Bryce mentions Mahler's Third, I mean, isn't that one of those enormous symphonies that sometimes could be, you know, depending on who's conducting it, 10 minutes longer, 15 minutes shorter, that kind of thing? I'm very curious, and always have been, about what conductors do. Is some kind of intimidating mystery about what it is that you do. And in terms of getting a score from someone like Bryce, say it arrives in the post, what's the first thing you do with that? Do you just sit down and read it like a book, or do you search for the bit that gets you in, or what do you do?
Yeah, sure. If there's no, I mean, that's the beauty of it, maybe then there being no recording. So you come to it like it is like a completely new thing, and you have to spend some more time. And you're reading it, and maybe try to play it on the piano. Doesn't do it justice. But then you sort of. My first teacher was the great German conductor Michael Gielen, who did a lot of contemporary music. And in my first masterclass with him, he explained about learning scores in layers. So you really have to start at the bottom, and you just read 8 bars of just the bass part and then the string parts and then you try and hear it in your head, and then you start putting it on top of each other in your mind. And it's a really good exercise. It's like an oral exercise as well. And this is what you have to do, or you play it on the piano. What's great about Bryce's music is that it's sometimes, maybe on the page, some of it is super complex, some of it looks deceptively simple, and that's what I love about Mari, that sometimes there's just one bass line, and it's actually just B minor, and it's going up, and then there's a C flat, so then suddenly there's a But the beauty of it is that when you come to the orchestra and rehearse for the first time and it starts enveloping you, and there's something you can't be prepared for. The moment when you're there and the orchestra is doing it and there's a spacious, and I don't know how Bryce does it, and it's something you can't just see from the page, but you have to be there, and then suddenly it happens. And it sort of gives you goosebumps, which is also dangerous. You're not supposed to be emotional in rehearsal because you're supposed to be in control, and you're supposed to be hearing and rehearsing and thinking what you're doing next. But it just happens to you, and this is what I love about it. I mean, it actually happened to me in the performance. I've done Mari once before, and I thought I knew sort of what it was about, and we were playing it, and tonight in the performance, things happened that I was like, wow, and kind of... And of course, that's a dangerous moment too, but also you have to allow that to happen and channel it somehow. And this is what I love about this piece and the music. And yeah, this is what happens, whatever preparation you do.
I mean, you described very well there, you know, the prime sort of delights of a piece like that. But I'd be curious about what the difficulties are with a piece like Mari, because the difficulties in the second piece are kind of obvious even to someone like me, because I know how difficult it must be to play that for the orchestra and for Pekka. But in Mari, what was difficult about that piece, do you think, that you had to overcome?
It's a purely orchestral piece, so there's nowhere to hide. I mean, in second piece, I could hide behind Pekka's brilliance a little bit, or the orchestra might be able to, but they didn't need to. They were just as brilliant. But in Mari, it's quite... for an opener piece, normally people commission opening pieces by a modern composer, and it's supposed to be 10 minutes long, and don't make it any longer. It's really terrible. I just had a message today from Radio France, and they said, we're taking this piece off the program because the piece is 10 minutes longer than we commissioned. It's off. And I'm like, no, but this happens all the time. So Mari is about 17 minutes long, and it's you need to get, obviously, the difficulty of it is it's technically not as difficult as the violin concerto for the orchestra, but it's more expansive. There are some questions about pacing, to see the end coming up, to have these energetic... There's also energetic bits, just in like in the violin, in the middle of it, but they're contrasted with more expansive bits. And how do you string this all together? You can't just let yourself be carried away. So these are the difficulties for me, but also for the orchestra to understand how to pace themselves and where it's going. They need to get to know the piece, and it takes a few days to really... And I think, again, mostly we only understand the piece after we've done a performance of it.
It's really fascinating to hear that, you know, because, as I said, conductors are kind of a mystery to most of us. We think we understand musicians, perhaps, but what a conductor does is something else.
You can't think about it, though. If I start thinking about it, it's done. It's over.
Well, I won't ask you any more about it. I don't want to ruin
it. What am I doing, actually? If you start thinking about it, it's over.
Okay. Bryce, we talked earlier about the violin concerto a little bit and where it may have come from, but the fact that you wrote it specifically for Pekka, does that, in a sense, mean that he really is part of the inspiration for the piece? Because you're presumably thinking about him as you write it, because it's literally for him to play.
Yeah, it's Pekka's piece. I mean, it's not a violin concerto. It's a concerto for Pekka, for sure. And I wouldn't have, you know, Pekka asked me to write it. My string writing, I mean, it's really interesting because both of these guys are violinists and they're both conductors, actually, which occurred to me. But, you know, my string writing is like, I've had years and years of kind of bouncing off either one of them. So it's taken me, you know, to get to the point that I could write that piece has taken time. You know, I've written several string quartets and solo pieces and string orchestra pieces and orchestral works. And writing a violin concerto is a daunting task. It's not quite climbing Mount Everest, but it feels that way when you're staring it down, because there's so many incredible concertos that are performed. You know, it's like the big pieces. So it's why write one is kind of, you know, and you just, if you ask yourself that question too much, you're going to crumble. I ended up kind of embracing that is, you know, there was, again, you know, thinking about this idea, like, why take a path so many have taken before me? You know, what, you know, like, it's kind of like a pilgrimage. You're making some sort of journey. And so I kind of embraced that. And it really, you know, Pekka, there was another detail, which is we have, you know, Pekka is so in demand because only, obviously, you can imagine, right? So, and So he's had incredible pieces. This is, you know, I think this one's pretty good, but there's a bunch of others that are amazing too that have been written for him. And there were two recent ones by friends of ours, two incredible composers, Nico Muhly and Daniel Bjarnason, that in the kind of seasons prior, which had, you know, both of which I really like and had kind of done certain things. And so, you know, probably my first instinct, you know, I know that you all think I'm like a heavy metal person after that like intense piece, but the truth is my usual instinct is pretty gentle when I come to something. But because of I felt like Pekka had some sort of gentler, more varied pieces. So I thought, all right, we're going to go for it. You know, we're going. And so I sent him the pieces like, what did you do? And so it was partly kind of in conversation. Not only are you in conversation with the history of this archetype of, you know, it's like trying to build a Gothic cathedral or something. You know, how are you going to do that? You're responding to this incredible tradition. Weirdly, you know, as far as, for instance, the Dvorak symphony, right? So the symphonic form, I find the concerto form something that I love hearing a concerto by a young composer. I find that it really works in the concert hall. It works, you know, it's something that inspired me, that it feels like the sort of reason for it being there makes a lot of sense, you know, mostly because of the soloist bringing into the hall and kind of communicating between the conductor, the orchestra, and the audience. You know, writing, there are these other kind of big forms of the classical tradition, the most famous one being the symphony, which is a four movement, often, you know, 40 plus minutes getting, you know, you were talking about a piece being removed at Radio France because it was 12 minutes long. I mean, if you write a 40 minute symphony, the chances of it getting played are minimal, maybe once, unless the concert hall here wants to commission my first symphony. But anyway,
what about the question of difficulty? Because you write something, but it has to be playable. You know, and there have been situations in the past where musicians have had to come back to the composer and say, "This is all fine and dandy, but nobody can play this." Are you in this one really pushing? You know how good he is, but are you pushing him as far as you think you can go?
Yeah, I mean, he can go further. I mean, there's a whole other kind of complexity that, I mean, Pekka works a lot with Tom Addis, who is, you know, one of the great living composers and whose music is famously complex and more difficult than this piece, I would think.
Well, let's say.
And Andre also conducts all kinds of, you know, crazy music. So, you know, I don't know that but I do like, I like virtuosity. I will say that I like, and that's in the orchestra as well. You know, I grew up playing the flute and then played, you know, studied classical guitar really seriously. And I've done, you know, a lot of chamber music over the years. And, you know, I think that, I like music that pushes and maybe challenges, but